This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hey there, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Rachel Geringer, and in this episode, we bring you stories about regional history and innovative new approaches to meeting the healthcare needs of East Kentuckians. First, from Ohio Valley Resource reporter Brittany Patterson, we look back on two decades of resistance with the Coal River Mountain Watch.
Mountaintop removal coal mining has profoundly changed Appalachia's landscape and its people. The controversial practice blows the tops off of mountains to get to the coal below, and it sparked a wave of protest from affected communities. One group in the heart of West Virginia's coal country recently marked 20 years of activism against mountaintop removal. Reporter Brittany Patterson visited Coal River Mountain Watch as the group takes stock of two decades of work and the work still ahead.
Coal River Mountain Watch's history of resistance is plastered on the walls of the group's modest office in Raleigh County, West Virginia. Co-executive director Vernon Haltom points to a series of framed photos.
Ah, here we go. Over here by the pop-up machine. So there's Janice back there. And here's Debbie, our co-director, being cuffed.
The nonprofit started in response to mountaintop removal mining, which was reshaping the landscape and life in southern West Virginia.
It takes a lot of courage to stand up when you're right in the middle of it, and that's what Coal River Mountain Watch has been doing for its two decades of existence.
Vivian Stockman with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition says the group's profile grew in the early 2000s, in part because of activist Judy Bonds.
Judy Bonds was fond of saying, "Turn the dozers around."
A coal miner's daughter and waitress, Bonds won the Goldman Prize, sometimes called the Green Nobel, for her work in Appalachia. In her 2003 acceptance speech, she preached the power of organizing.
Organize, educate, motivate, mentor young children.
The group focused on grassroots action and protest, but Bonds also made some unlikely allies, like Mike Caputo, an organizer with United Mine Workers. The two teamed up to reduce the weight of coal trucks. Caputo, now a delegate in West Virginia's legislature, says Bonds was dedicated to her community.
Even when we disagreed, I miss her dearly. She was a true... You look up the word activist and you'll see Judy Bonds' picture beside it.
Bonds died of cancer in 2011, 2 decades after Coal River Mountain Watch began its battle to stop mountaintop removal. The practice continues. Funders' priorities have shifted, limiting resources. But Haltom says the group claims some hard-fought victories. It helped move an elementary school that had been literally in the shadow of a massive mining operation. And research has validated many concerns the group raised about the health impacts of mountaintop removal. It's linked to cancer, lung disease, and birth defects.
The blasting dust is deadly. I mean, it's silica. We've known silica as a killer. But for some reason, people think that Appalachians are immune to it.
At their solar-powered headquarters, the group models possible alternatives to coal mining, such as hemp farming and beekeeping. And they're instilling in a younger generation a passion for the mountains around them. To mark its 20 years, Coal River Mountain Watch hosted a creek cleanup. Dozens of kids and adults crashed through Peachtree Creek, gathering bottles, plastic bags, and even a kid-sized swimming pool. After more than an hour of tough work, volunteers took a dip in Peachtree Falls. Despite recent setbacks, Haltom says Coal River Mountain Watch will keep fighting to make the community better.
I think we've come a long way in helping people understand that there's a better way of living. You know, don't treat your community like it's a disposable item.
That's what the cleanup at Peachtree Falls embodies. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Raleigh County, West Virginia.
And a safe lie in the port with friends we love so dear. Get ready, cries the captain. Oh, look. She is almost here.
Researchers at the University of Kentucky and the Mountain Air Project wanted to learn what young people in eastern Kentucky think about lung disease, air quality, and environmental health. So, they gave digital cameras to 10 students at Letcher County Schools and asked them to photograph things in their communities that could contribute to lung disease. The results appeared in a journal article earlier this year. WMMT's Sydney Bowles spoke with one of the study's participants, Bella Black.
The Mountain Air Project is a Letcher County-based study exploring the environmental causes of high rates of lung disease in eastern Kentucky. The project included an interesting form of research called a PhotoVoice project. In this project, Mountain Air researchers trained 10 Letcher County teenagers to use cameras to document things that might contribute to lung disease in their communities. Those photos were published in October in the International Journal for Environmental Research and Public Health. Isabella Back of Kona, Kentucky, participated in the project. She's in school now at Georgetown College, but I visited with her on her family farm over Thanksgiving to talk about the project.
So, yeah, tell me how you heard about this PhotoVoice thing.
So I actually took a journalism class my junior year of high school, and our teacher is, her name's Rebecca Potter, and she was telling us about this photo contest that was going on, and I don't know if she actually knew what the program was, because she called it a photo contest. We were all about it. They said, you'll get a free camera, take some photos with it, and it'll be kind of like a photo contest. So I was like, heck yeah, okay. Had no idea what it was. And so I actually showed up to the first meeting and learned that it was completely different, but it was better than I ever could have hoped for, honestly. It was just an amazing opportunity to get to speak about my environment, what I grew up in, kind of some of the stigmas about Eastern Kentucky and our just things like that. I don't think a lot of different, there's a lot of different ways for young people to speak up, especially around here. So it was just an amazing opportunity that I got to participate in.
Do you feel like you had ever thought about, like, lung health around here, lung disease?
I had. I have a lot of family members that smoke, a lot of family members that use chewing tobacco, stuff like that. My father was a coal miner. My grandfather was a coal miner on both sides. So it seems goes really far back in our family. And you know, you hear about black lungs so much in this community. There is so so much talk about just in the ways that people who have black lung can't get any assistance, things like that. So you hear about that so much, it's kind of hard to not think about, you know, the problems with lung disease and things like that in eastern Kentucky. If you go to any older person, you know, a lot of them have asthma. I know my dad's side of the family just has breathing problems in general, stuff like that. So,
if you don't mind me asking, and you can tell me if you want me to screw off, but did your dad pass away?
No, he's still alive. Okay. Yeah. His father actually had a lot of problems breathing near his death, and he had black lung. He smoked a lot too, so that was very rough on his lungs, and he had a lot of problems from that. So it's definitely a big part of my family.
But I mean, I guess like there's black lung and there's smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it seems to me like part of the idea of this project was to like get you guys, the students, mm-hmm. thinking about other things,
yes,
that would impact that.
Yes.
So what did you learn about other things that can impact your health?
We learned a lot about environmental factors. We also learned about things in your home that a lot of people aren't educated about, sort of like how we heat our homes has a lot to do with lung disease. I know up until I was 12, we used a wood-burning stove in our house. Things like that can affect your lung health. We use bleach for everything, you know. It just things like that. There's no real education for things that could affect your health.
Maybe let's look at your pictures and then go from there.
Okay. I will try to find one. Yeah, it was very interesting trying to decide like what the subject could be for the photos.
Yeah, I want to know a lot about your thought process.
So, I was just thinking about how lung disease affect me, like just me in general. And I have a family member that smokes. And so, my favorite picture that I took was of a pack of cigarettes and some change laying out on the table. And it was just kind of representative of a story that happened to me about me and my family member. And we were driving home from somewhere, can't really remember, and we had stopped at the gas station. And I was going to get a water and some chips because I was hungry. And I hadn't told my family member this, and they had forgotten their debit card, and they had, like, just enough money to get a pack of cigarettes, and they were out. And so I wasn't going to mention to them that I wanted a water or anything like that because I didn't want them to not be able to get their cigarettes in a way, you know, you just don't want to inconvenience somebody like that. And although, like, it's not an everyday thing, obviously, for me to choose between food and a pack of cigarettes, but I know for so many people in Eastern Kentucky it is.
One of the themes that the paper's authors drew out of that is this idea of compromising health for livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that, that's like their like fancy academic words, but is that something that you guys talked about in class?
Oh, it's such a risk, and it's so out of necessity for people here. I mean, there was so many people who grew up, had no way of going to college, but they could go work in the mines and make good money and support their families. That was the only way. You know, what else were they supposed to do around here? There's no factories to work in. There's no infrastructure here. You know, it was their only option. It was out of necessity for so, so many people. And I think a lot of it does stem from that, just the necessity of having to feed your family. You know, like, they couldn't make that decision to stay healthy and not be exposed to black lung. I mean, they knew what they were going into. Their fathers and their grandfathers were in the mines. They knew that black lung existed, that how dangerous it was, but they still went anyways. And I don't think they would do that, you know, because they wanted to. It's out of necessity. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have more knowledge now to go out and educate other people about it. I feel like I have a greater appreciation just for using my voice as a young person, because people will listen to you. And I didn't really think about that before, like on the stage of like saying it in a group or a room full of researchers, part of a panel and people listening to you as a person that was 17 at the time, that was pretty incredible. You know, people will take your opinions and your ideas into account, and how important it is to speak out if you feel strongly about something. So that has changed me a lot.
That's so awesome.
That was Isabella Back talking about her work with the Mountain Air Youth Photo Voice Project. I'm Sydney Bowles, and you're listening to Mountain News on WMMT.
As with many other health issues, East Kentucky has higher rates of diabetes than the rest of the state and the rest of the country. Odds are, you know something about it. But something you might not know is that even if it runs in your family, diabetes is one health issue that in many cases can be prevented. And a program that's being offered across East Kentucky is trying to help people do just that. As part of an ongoing series featuring stories of local people dealing with diabetes and pre-diabetes, Parker Hobson has the story.
Every other week, a small group comes together at the Breathitt County Extension Office in Jackson, Kentucky, to learn and share and joke and tell stories and support each other in regards to their health. But they're not sick, and they don't necessarily have any symptoms of anything. They're trying to prevent type 2 diabetes.
So when y'all eat, what do you usually eat first?
Whatever looks the best.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking. I wonder. Yeah. I save my favorite for last, so I probably eat more like the vegetables first. But sometimes that's bad because if I'm full,
Then you don't get your favorite. Cause
you're, or I'll eat
or
it
you
anyway.
Just eat it anyway. That's what I was thinking. I would eat it anyway.
I'm not about
The group is meeting through Juniper Health as a part of the Diabetes Prevention Program, a lifestyle change program developed by the National Centers for Disease Control. Juniper is just one of several clinics and health departments that offer the program across the region, and all of the groups are full of local people trying to stop diabetes before it starts.
And you hear all the time people in the clinics talking about so-and-so lost a toe, or their aunt or uncle lost part of their leg, or, you know, we have a lady who's lost part of her arm. You know, it's just ridiculous when it's preventable.
Bridget Turner of Juniper Health is one of the facilitators of the Diabetes Prevention Program, or DPP for short. A few years ago, she herself was diagnosed with diabetes.
I was frustrated. There were so many opportunities along the way where I could have been given more information that I wasn't. It was really just disheartening to think, now I have it. And I didn't have to have it. And that's probably why when Missy said, let's become educators, I said, okay.
So, especially if you live around here, you've probably heard of diabetes. But briefly, there are two kinds. Type 1 diabetes is genetic, so you have to be born with it. Type 2, though, happens over the course of your life. And very basically, it's when your body stops being able to get rid of glucose or sugar in your bloodstream. This can lead to serious problems. It can damage your eyesight and your kidneys. It can cause you to lose feeling in parts of your body and eventually even lose limbs. And it also carries a huge risk for cardiovascular disease, which in some cases can be life-threatening. But even if all this is familiar, there is another condition known as prediabetes that you might not know about. Basically, prediabetes means you don't have type 2 diabetes yet, but your blood sugar is high enough that you're officially in the danger zone for getting it. Prediabetes is often diagnosed through what's known as an A1C test, which takes an average of your blood sugar levels over the past 3 months.
If your blood sugar is, 5.7 to 6.4, you are prediabetic. And if you don't do some things to make some health changes, the chances of you actually developing diabetes are pretty high. And once you get diabetes, once you get over the 6.4 mark, you have diabetes forever. It doesn't go away. It might be controlled, but according to what we understand from my medical knowledge, once you get it, you've gotten it.
Part of what makes prediabetes so tricky is that you can have it without showing any symptoms. According to the CDC, about 1 out of 3 Americans already has prediabetes, whether we know it or not. Jonathan Piercy is a doctor from Hazard who works in the diabetes clinic at Perry County's North Fork Valley Community Health Center.
It would probably be easier if high blood sugar hurt, if there were a whole lot of symptoms. But in order to have actual symptoms acutely of high blood sugar, then it's got to be very high, which is part of why it takes so long for somebody to get treated.
Sadly, Eastern Kentucky has higher rates of diabetes than the rest of the state and the country. But even though it's common here, health workers say there are misconceptions about it. For one, they say people don't always realize that diabetes is preventable, even if it runs in your family. Rebecca Smith is another DPP educator at Juniper Health.
Somebody pretty well known in the community told me, he said, got that diabetes, I knew it was coming, it finally got me. I
was just like, come and got him, huh?
Come and got him, right off the couch.
I think it's just become commonplace for people. Grandpa had diabetes, granny had it, my aunt, sister had it, my aunt had it, and everybody just kind of is like, okay, I have diabetes now.
Mary Beth Castle is the DPP educator at the Johnson County Health Department in Paintsville. She herself was diagnosed with prediabetes a few years ago.
That is, okay, maybe I am going to end up with type 2 diabetes later on in life. I mean, it's the possibilities for me are good, but I'm willing to take the chances to try to prolong all of that down the road as long as I can.
And the DPP is set up to help people, especially people with prediabetes, prolong or even prevent diabetes entirely. It varies a little by county, but it's a year-long program. You meet in a small group once a week for 16 weeks, and then about once a month after that. Everyone gets an individual weight loss goal, and then you focus on strategies for getting there, like healthy recipes, keeping a log of what you eat, or tricks to get more exercise over the course of the day. Bridget says losing as little as 5 to 7% of your weight can go a long way in preventing diabetes.
We know that increasing activity and making better food choices can help prevent diabetes. What we have found is people who come in gung-ho for the program and have a lot of weight loss up front tend to burn out because they go so hard and so fast. It's not something that they can sustain for a lifetime. We talk a lot about baby steps. If you drink a lot of sugary beverages, where's maybe one less beverage that you could drink? Can you get up on a TV commercial and walk to the bathroom and come back? We want you to start thinking about ways that you can be more active. And 5 to 7%, if you weigh 300 pounds, 5% of that's only 15 pounds, right? So that's doable.
Another misconception the DPP tackles is that it's only sweet foods that can lead to diabetes. Here's Dr. Piercy again.
This is a point that a lot of people miss, is we're not just talking about things that are sweet. We're talking about breads, talking about potatoes, talking about starchy things. That's probably where more people get in trouble. It's the same molecules, the same glucose that gets formed when those break down.
You know, and just understanding, reading the label, and if you're eating a low-fat yogurt and you think you're doing great, but then you compare a low-fat yogurt with a light yogurt and realize the low-fat yogurt has twice the carbs in it as the light does, then you realize, oh my goodness, I thought I was doing good. Well, you were doing good. You just didn't have all the information. So here's a little bit more information.
Once you realize how much turns into glucose, whether it's ice cream or bread or potatoes, it can be overwhelming. But it doesn't mean you have to stop eating everything you like. Here's Mary Beth again.
I don't tell them they can't eat this or they can't eat that. I tell them they can have what they want to eat. They need to do it in moderation, and they need to look at portion sizes. We live in an area where our grannies and our mamas want our plates to be full of food, and they want us to eat everything on there. Trying to get them to get back to that, instead of 3 spoonfuls, start with 2 of green beans instead of 3 of the green beans, even though that's probably a better thing that you can eat. Because if they just cut back on portions alone, that's going to make a difference. I don't expect them to come in here and have 10 pounds lost, you know, in a week. Or maybe not even 10 pounds in a month. If they're moving the scale in the downward direction, that's what we want them to do. And I want them to feel good about it.
Kathy, on the other hand, did have a log for me.
She's good.
So, she's so good.
She gets bonus points for the day.
Look at that 1 cup of water.
I'm trapped, Kathy.
Yoo-hoo!
Well, I was probably in denial, but my parents and my family have it. And life had happened to me. I lost both parents within 7 months. I was a caretaker, so I didn't get out a lot.
LaDonna Arms is from Paintsville and has been a member of the DPP group at the Johnson County Health Department. Mary Beth has been her group leader.
I guess it was just dealing with everything with my parents, and then when I lost them, I'm thinking, you know what, I'm not getting any younger. It is really time for me to get it in gear, you know, get it under control. I started making gradual changes, started walking a lot. Like Saturday, I walked over 7 miles, and I may want a candy bar, but then I may look at that calorie and that sugar content and I'll think, I don't need that. So I may take a piece of fruit. And I was a big pop person. It's unbelievable amounts of sugar. Tried the sugar-free cherry Kool-Aid, you know, drink a lot more water. Just make better choices. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot better.
You care to share how much weight you have lost?
As of today, 23 pounds. This has been life-changing for me.
Aww.
And I couldn't have handpicked any better group.
Had I thought about being diabetic? No, not really. I didn't have it in my family. I didn't have any symptoms. But I also know that I don't want any.
Doris Newton lives in Jackson, Kentucky. She recently went through the Juniper DPP program in Breathitt County.
I think accountability. That's probably the biggest thing that got me where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And because we did it together and the other class members, and we were always very verbal about, did you lose any? Oh, if you didn't, it'll be all right next week. And I was pretty successful. I think I did lose the most in that class, 23 pounds.
it was nice to not have to suck it up to zip your pants.
Masha Ott lives in the community of Wolverine. She was in the same class as Doris.
But I just followed exactly their protocol, and it really, really works in terms of knocking the pounds off. I think it was 17 if I count right. Diabetes is something you can turn around. Nip it in the bud, you can change it.
And a program like this can help you make those changes.
None of this is to say the DPP is easy, though. For one, changing habits is always hard. But healthier food can take more time to prepare and is often more expensive, which can be tough if you're on a budget. And in many parts of the region, places to buy groceries at all can be few and far between. Many local communities also just don't have very many practical or affordable places to exercise. The participants I spoke with, though, said these challenges were real, but the key for them was doing it together.
The weekly meeting is wonders. And just getting to hear what everybody else is doing. You know, if they've had a rough week, if they've had a great week, you know, just that moral support.
We have talked a lot about pop.
That's the biggest thing.
How's it going, Kathy, for you with drinking pop?
I'm not drinking her.
Are you drinking her?
But are you are you enjoying it? Yes. There you go. But you're targeting other areas.
Yes.
I have not met anybody who wants to make choices to lead them to diabetes on purpose. You know, and even myself, am I as healthy as I need to be? No. But I don't drink pop anymore, you know, and my A1C is in a good place. I will not do things that are going to contribute to me not being able to see my grandchildren. My father-in-law lost his vision, and my last baby he didn't get to see. That was preventable. And my brother-in-law died from diabetic complications. That was preventable. It doesn't have to happen.
And I'm looking for a life change. I don't want this just to be for 3 or 4 more months and then stop. I want it to be for a lifetime.
In Eastern Kentucky, the Diabetes Prevention Program is currently offered in small groups at the Kentucky River District Health Department, Juniper Health, the Clover Fork Clinic, the Johnson County and Clay County Health Departments, and online. To get your A1C checked, it's a simple blood test that your doctor can do in a single visit. For more on all this, and for a short quiz to see if you might be at risk for prediabetes, check out doihaveprediabetes.org. For WMMT, I'm Parker Hobson.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at wmmt.org. Or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. Music on this episode features Jean Ritchie with a tune called Stream of Time from her album Sweet Rivers. Sweet Rivers was released by Appleshop's own June Apple Recordings in 1981. I've been your host, Rachel Gehringer, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio, and happy holidays.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.